Welcome back, everybody. Another episode of Bootstrapped Web. Brian, it is the Friday before Thanksgiving.
Oh, it is.
So it is. It is next week. I don't know about you. I see that Friday. It does not make sense to me to work on that Friday. Don't make no sense.
On like Black Friday, you mean?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, this year we're going to drive up to my mom's place, which is about an hour north of us. So usually we go out to my cousins in Pennsylvania. So it'll sort of be nice to like not do like an overnight trip this time. Okay. We're just going to go out there and back on the one day, and then I'll be back here on Friday. But yeah, like probably going to take it easy, make it easy. A long weekend. Yeah.
Yeah, we're staying local, which we were considering going to Mexico City to visit good friends out there. And then between all the construction in the house, all the stuff in Israel, we were just like, let's just take it easy.
Yeah.
Let's just not. And so I'm very excited. The kids are off for like 10 days. They were off today, yesterday, and today, and are off the entire week next week.
10 days?
Yes.
You guys seem to have all these like unusual vacations.
Yes. Like they tend to bunch them up here instead of like a day off or a teacher conference here. They tend to bunch. And then you end up having, like, we have the week after New Year's off entirely. And this entire week.
I think that's genius. It's better. I think that's great. Brilliant, you know?
Yep. It makes it easier.
I always wished that we had something. I think actually this year we're sort of planning on, like, just taking our kids out of school the week after New Year's.
Right.
Because that's such a better week to go travel somewhere than, like, the Christmas New Year's week, you know?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, this year we're doing the holidays in DC, where my sister-in-law and her family are. So that'll be interesting. We're used to hosting at our house, but I don't mind going somewhere else.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, Bryce, so how's the week going?
So I've got a couple of small updates on Clarity Flow, and then maybe we'll get into our usual like philosophical discussions.
Yeah. What is the meaning of being in business for yourself in 2020?
Who are we really?
What are we doing? Is this what we meant to do with our lives? Yep.
Man, what do you got? What you want to kick it off?
Yeah, sure. I had a board meeting earlier in the week, so I want to talk about that and some factors around our investors and board observers specifically. I want to talk about integrating our new account executives into the team and into the go-to-market function. One account executive started this week on Monday, and the second one starts next week on Monday. Nice. So given the time of year, we really have this opportunity to do a bunch of training and a bunch of onboarding and practicing just to be ready for Q1. So I'll talk about that. Then the first thing, I guess, where I start off is I have been having a really tough time focusing on work.
Yeah.
It has been a real challenge, and it's gone easier and harder depending on the day. But generally speaking, if I look back at the last month, you know, I've mentioned in the past, I'm from Israel and have a lot of family there and cousins in the army and everything. And I think all of us, not all of us, many of us are like information addicts. We are much more aware of what's going on than most people because we don't look to the TV for our news. We look to the internet and Twitter and Instagram.
For better or worse.
Right, for better or worse. And I enjoy being a high information diet person. I like to know what's going on.
Yeah, me too. I go through seasons with it. I think I happen to be in terms of like world news, I keep up with the headlines and everything, but like, I think a couple of years ago, I was way more actively consuming news and like politics and economic stuff. And now I sort of just tune into the headlines at a, I would say much lighter, pace than I usually do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I used to be very deep into like politics and world news, and then I backed off and found myself to just be much happier.
Yeah.
And up until
I also find it like, I don't know, I think part of it that might be the case for me, but like also I think it just has become like less interesting and a little bit and just more and more ridiculous too, especially when
a little ridiculous, US a bit depressing.
Like it's sort of like both depressing and just such a circus and just ridiculous that it's like that. It's just not even interesting anymore. Like it is, yeah. It is what it is. I don't know.
So, normally, like before October 7th, that is how I felt. I also didn't like giving that much attention and emotion to things that I don't control. It just didn't feel like it was a good investment of time and energy and focus. Mm-hmm. When you can look at your home, your family, your spouse, your kids, your community, your business, like that deserves your attention more so.
Yeah.
But I have not been able to take that type of approach because this is so close to home.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I just got off a call earlier today where I met with some people on the go-to-market team and was not happy with some of the things I heard. I am much quicker to anger right now than I normally am. And it's coming out during the day at work also.
So this was like a routine, like work thing. And
Friday we talked to the, yep.
Yeah. So but the thing that you were unhappy with was just something that happens like in the course of work, but you're saying like you were sort of like set off a lot quicker than you otherwise would be about it.
Yes. I usually blend in frustration with the appropriate level of response. If it's a big deal, it's okay to have a big reaction. Mm-hmm. If it's not that big of a deal, then you don't need a big reaction. And maybe you blend it in with a bit of humor. You can give the message clearly. That doesn't make sense. I disagree with that. Let's go a different way. Right? Like as this team develops and we all are working together toward a goal that's pretty clear. Everyone knows what we're trying to do. I found myself more direct and more willing to be the person on the call that says, no, we're going to do it this way. And that, generally speaking, feels good. Some decisiveness from the boss, I think, is actually helpful to everyone. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, well, what do you think and what do you think? And I like to do the what do you think. But over the last like 6 months, as things have just been clarified in terms of our goals, I know what I have in mind and I'm more direct, which feels good. Right now, I am not my normal version of myself. And it feels like maybe, I guess, overreaction would be the right term, right? It's literally a little bit more of a reaction than something deserves.
Yeah. I mean, what does this look like, actually day to day in terms of, I don't know, like maybe we can talk through like what our actual like news diets look like, or not just news, but like where, like what's actually different about your focus or attention day to day, given what's happening in the world? Like, are you like tuning into more news than you otherwise normally would be? Are there, I don't know.
So my normal habit is to look to Twitter as a source of entertainment and news. So if I go on Twitter and I'm entertained and I'm following people that I like to follow, and I'm relatively active about muting people, and so I'm trying to tailor that experience. If I do that on Twitter, normally speaking, I'm also pretty informed on news because things that happen make their way to Twitter.
You know, it's interesting. I do follow some like, you know, mainstream like news publications on Twitter, I guess. Mm-hmm. But I don't see my Twitter timeline as my source of news, to be honest. I think that the who I follow is like not really. I see some of it come through, but it's
a narrow slice.
My main source of news is literally just like checking news websites on a daily basis. You know?
Yeah, I never check a news website. Every once in a while.
Yeah, I do like have a route. I actually browse news like at night when I'm in bed.
Okay.
And I've got a rotation of sites that I kind of flip through. I don't watch TV news. Like it's basically like, you know, online.
Yeah, I go 100% individual news sources and freelance people. My level of disgust for mainstream media sources right now is astronomical.
Yeah.
Here's the one of the most interesting things that I have found over the last few weeks on Twitter is that I now live on the For You page, not the following page.
I'm still on the following page for sure.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. That's kind of an interesting twist though, right? I mean, the For You page, didn't it like just come out a few months ago?
No, I thought
either way, maybe it's been there for a while, but I always ignored it. If I could have removed it from my,
I was Twitter, on that. Like, I think they called it the home maybe, or like, yeah like whatever, like whatever, that. Like the algorithm tab was, I was on that for a while. And I found that I didn't like how, in some ways addicting and also in some ways, like it showed me stuff that like either angered me or
just
really distracted me. Whereas like now with following, I'm like adequately bored sometimes. And it,
right.
And
you're it, like, in control. And go, okay. I scrolled for 10 minutes and then let me move on with my life.
Yeah.
Because I'm so hungry to consume what's happening, I have migrated over to the For You page. I don't even go to the following page anymore. Mm. So that's a change. And the other new thing is that I now look to Instagram as my relief. I never open Instagram.
I must have opened it
10 times over the last 5 years. Just didn't go there at all. And now I look at it because it is more curated into who I'm following. I don't see, you know, how some woman got killed as a hostage on Instagram.
The only two that I actually touch these days are Twitter. And I do go to Threads a couple times a day. I'm trying to integrate Threads more into my daily routine and try to actually like socialize more. This is sort of like a call to listeners. I wish that like our circles in our industry would migrate Twitter to fully migrate to Threads, because it's a better product. It seems generally more positive, and Twitter just seems too mixed and weird. Actually, just going back to the news, like the news consumption, I have switched, I guess going back a couple months to a year now, I actually unsubscribed from New York Times. It got to a point where it was like just the bias is like so blatantly obvious and frustrating to me.
The New York Times can go fuck itself, is my opinion.
Yeah. And so, and a lot of that like got to me, but also I've been picking up this app, Artifact. Have you seen this?
No.
The creators of Instagram. This is their new app that they've been working on for about a year now. It's a news aggregating app. And there are, you know, I've tried like the Apple News app. I've tried like the Google News app, and I was never happy. And like Flipboard, I think is one. Like,
right.
I was never happy with those like aggregators. They just never really worked well. This one is really good.
Interesting.
Really well designed. It builds it just gives you a really good mix of articles and sources, and based on your, like the more you click on certain types, it's almost like a YouTube feed or any other social feed, but it's just for giving you news links. And it gets better over time. The more you read, the more you click on stuff, the better it knows your interests. And I find that it gives me a much more diverse and set of sources, you know. And I just have a feed of US world news, tech news, a lot of sports in there, a lot of, you know, culture stuff. Like it's all a mix, and it's super interesting. I really like it.
Interesting. Yeah. I think the most important thing, right, we're kind of talking about like sources of info and how to get it and what we're using. The trying is the operative word here, to take control of that consumption has been the first, you know, few weeks, I didn't care to control it. I wanted all the information and all the rage and all the triggering and all the other stuff. Now I'm at the point where I don't want to bring that anger and darkness into my house. And so I have had to very deliberately, I moved Twitter to like a few screens in on my phone. So I have to kind of consciously go over there instead of like the bottom four. It doesn't work, but at least it's not in the bottom four.
Yeah.
So I find if I wake up and I open Twitter, I am re-traumatized and furious. And then my sweet little 7-year-old walks in and climbs into the bed. And daddy is full of rage and death in his mind And I don't want that. So I've tried to control a bit more on when to go in and when not to go in.
I'll be honest. I often, especially with this,
not succeeding
with what's happening in the world and in Israel, I do feel a sense of guilt sometimes in how much I actually tune it out.
Sure. Sure.
I feel like
it is reasonable to feel the guilt and reasonable to tune out.
Yeah. I feel that a lot. Because I still check the headlines, and I still go to mainstream news outlets, and like those show up in my artifact feed.
Right. I think it's important.
And I do look to those to say, all right, if it has filtered through these like mainstream news outlets, like these actually are the biggest headlines going on in the world. It keeps me on the pulse. But yeah, like the individual stories and videos and stuff that comes through social media, like I just can't. Can't get into it.
Yeah. Maybe the way to say it is that my guilt is much higher because I'm literally in a WhatsApp group with my cousins.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask you, like, how much of it is like, obviously it's your family.
Yes.
Connections are what drives this, right?
Like, yes. I mean, I was born on a kibbutz, which is the type of community that got attacked. It does not feel like it happened to other people. It feels like it happened to my people. Mm-hmm. And it is ongoing, right? These monsters are going to torture and kill all the fucking hostages. So it is an ongoing atrocity. It's not something that happened. And so I am confused on how to tune out and focus on the right things versus pay attention. So it just feels like it's not going to be easy anytime soon.
Yeah, man. It's tough. It's like, you know, cause like, and also it's, what we do for a living in running these businesses, like that in itself is so all consuming, you know? So then when you have these other things in life, kind of like clashing with that, like showing up in your work meetings, it's tough. I feel like, yeah, like if you're sort of like working in a job, there's more of a mental separation between your work, your stuff at your job, and the rest of your life. Whereas, like I struggle with like never being able to turn it off. I'm sitting there in my bed, and my 7-year-old comes in, and we're playing around, and I can't stop thinking about like strategy. for the business,
or what you should do, or did you get back to this email, or just all the things that we're consumed with. So I, you know, it is not okay for me to go to Twitter and read things that make me very angry and then just move over to Zoom and start talking to people. That's like not fair to me or them. It's not an easy thing to control. And then I walk out of my house and it's like a beautiful fall day in a nice neighborhood, and kids are like yelling down the block, and the whole thing is just a very confusing experience.
If I can, like, so a couple things that have sort of helped for me, I think in the past year, in terms of like changes in habits, number one is definitely exercise. But also like, so I have my morning exercise where either doing strength or going for a long walk outside, but now I like absolutely force myself to do another walk right after lunch to really clear my head. And I didn't used to do that because I used to be like, I'm in work mode. I want to ship stuff. So I wouldn't like leave my office all day. And now I like force myself to break it up. The other one is actually getting into sports. Honestly, like most of my adult life, like I sort of put my interest in sports down and then picked it back up in the last year or two. You know, I follow the Knicks and I follow the Mets a lot. And like, you know, a lot of us in this industry, I think find sports like pretty meaningless, but like, and I do too, to a certain extent, but like following the storylines and being like personally invested in it, like it feels like a healthy outlet for consumption of content that's like generally pretty positive and
yes,
compelling, and like there's strategy, and there's like, you know, I find that like really helpful. Like a pretty high portion of the actual news that I'm scrolling through is NBA and baseball news, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense why it has so many people's attention, because it is really good and it's generally positive and it's something to care about. That's not work or, you know,
news. The other thing, I was talking to my dad about this. Like, the other thing is, it's so fact-based. You just can't deny, you know, like there's in real news and in world news, there's so much fucking opinion about everything.
Yes.
There's so much slant and bias and like misinterpretation and misrepresentation.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
In sports, it's like the ball went in or it didn't.
Yeah, but there's a lot of opinion and it almost feels like low stakes opinion, at least as someone who isn't like a super fan. Like, yes, this person should start this week to me is like a, you know, it's not there's that opinion,
but that's also like strategic. And then you can totally judge these strategic decisions by the manager or by the organization
and
based
results
on what their win-loss record was, you know, like.
Yeah. I hear that. I think I tend to go toward the like creative. So my spare time when I'm like looking at the internet screen and I'm saying, what do I do now? I try to veer toward cooking is where I find myself. Mm-hmm. And then it's like research and shopping list. And like, it is an activity to do that's outside of work. Right. So Thanksgiving coming up, I got plans, you know, I want to have fun with food.
Yeah.
Oh yes. All right, homie, talk that's to definitely. Us. What do you got going on?
Yeah. So in Clarity Flow land, there are actually two new developments that I think look pretty promising. I'm pretty happy with them. Number one is, and these are like key projects that I had building and now finally shipped. So one is we shipped the new onboarding experience for new customers after they get into the app. When they start a new trial, now they're presented with an all new video guide, like a video tour. I recorded like 5 or 6 like fresh video demos, you know, recorded on video showing all of our newest features. And I built this interface that a new user can like tab through, like, all right, start here. Here's how conversations work. Now here's how you invite your clients. Here's how you can set up your courses. Here's how you can set up your coaching groups. You know, because before we had none of that, like they had to sort of like figure it out on their own or go through our email onboarding, which is, it's there, but it doesn't help right away when you sign up into the app. So now it's just a much more like robust and like it's just like the interface like makes it so much easier to find everything that we actually have to offer. I think that there are a lot of new trial users who were perfect fits, like they're coaches with a great coaching mm-hmm. business and they're exactly who would be a good fit for Clarity Flow. So like our marketing funnel sort of worked, it got them in, but then they get in there, it's like they can't find the features that they came for, or they tried to use it, but they use it in the wrong way, or they put it together in the wrong order. And
They just didn't discover it properly.
Yeah. And so that's had some really good initial feedback. I think it's been live for almost a week now.
Okay.
We've had multiple like new customer conversions since it launched, and like actual like messages from customers saying like, oh, this is, like, thank you. This is so Ooh. Helpful, you know?
Cool. Yeah. Can I ask what you meant? You tweeted about it and you called it video guides, not a tour.
Yes.
So what's like the difference? You're pointing at like not doing just tool tips to point out where things are. So
yeah.
How did you use the videos?
So, you know, you've probably seen this in a lot of SaaS where you sign up and then they've got these little like bubbles that point to, you know, the parts of the interface to sort of like walk you through, like handhold you through how to create the thing, or how to, you know, and not only are those like really complex to design and build, and I know that there's tools that you could plug in to do that and this and that, but like, but mm-hmm. I also find that like in most cases, in my experience, like those are really useless because they sort of, They handhold you through press this button and now click next and now press that button and now do this. But no one's going to actually go through that tour and actually create the actual thing. That's more of like a practice run. Like, I'm going to practice pressing this button and practice pressing next. And then I'm going to X out of this thing and I'm going to forget about what all that meant.
You know? Yes. Yes, which is what I do with every single tooltip.
Yeah.
I go next, done. And yeah, then
get me out of here and so that I can actually start creating.
And then when I need it, I'm like, where's that tooltip tour thing?
Yes, exactly. And I'm glad you brought that up, like bringing it back. And so that was a key part of what I built here was like, what happens is the videos, like the interface for the videos like pops up when you first come in. It's like a big modal pop-up. And you can watch the videos. You can tab through between, you know, from the courses video to the groups video to the commerce video, and like so whatever you're interested in, you can get to it, but I sort of recommend you go through in this order, but you can click around if you want. And you have like literally me on video walking you through, showing you how to, like demonstrating how to do it, showing you why it's important, giving you a few tips on how to be successful with it. And you have the option to just click out of it right away and start building it yourself. And I give you I do give you one little tool tip that points to like, here's where you can bring it back. Like you just closed the video guide. Now, when you need it back, it's over here. Just click that button to bring it right back. Yeah. You know? And I, you know, I built some smart controls in there. So like if you're viewing the courses area, when you open it up, it's going to open to the courses video. Or if you're viewing the commerce area, then it'll open up to the commerce video, you know? So we've had multiple conversions since that launched. So I was happy to see like at least it didn't kill conversions, and we've had a few and some good feedback. So that's pretty good.
Okay. Underway.
The other thing that started this week is our cold email outreach. This is something that it's incredible how complex and just a total pain to get this built and up and running. You know, we all know like all these tools out there for doing this, but really setting them up, setting up the email addresses, building out the lists, getting everything like warming up and configuring everything. It is a grind. It literally took us 2 months to just get to the point of like, now we have this really large list of contacts, and we can actually press go on our live sales campaign. So that started, I think, Monday of this week. We're recording on Friday. And already we have multiple trials and a couple of actual paid signups after a single cold email about Clarity Flow. And so that, it's a really good sign for like the very, for the week one batch of these things. And this is going to continue for the next several months. So, if the results continue like they did on week one, then
yes,
this could be a really good channel. I mean, it's still really early. Both of these things, like onboarding and cold outreach, like these are just improvements. Like I think they're going to add to our conversion rate. They're going to add to our overall trial and signups. But it hasn't changed like the whole calculus and trajectory on the business, but I think it's like good signs that the work that we've been doing for the last couple of months is sort of having the intended effect, at least in these early days. So we'll see.
Very interesting. If you can figure out a way to add customers without needing them to find their way to you, that opens up a very interesting new channel, new approach.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. The I have two big projects that I want to ship before the end of the year. One is the Clarity Flow Commerce feature. We're grinding on that. Still a couple of weeks away. And then the other one is the marketing feature. What you were just saying is like helping customers find their way to us. The way that we do it is SEO. That's been the channel that most people just discover us organically. And I need to overhaul that and get more programmatic in our approach. And I have a sort of a game plan there, but I haven't built out our processes to execute that. And once I do that in December, then my VA can run with that for several months. So
cool. Yeah, we'll keep track of both of our efforts on that front. You know, we're about to, I think LinkedIn ads will be up and running sometime in the next, probably not next week because of the timing, but the week after.
There you go. What else you got?
All right. So had a board meeting on Tuesday. It felt a little different from the last one. The last one was if there was more pressure around it, I was more stressed about it. I don't know if there was more to explain, but the nature of it felt really different this time. And I think that is a result of general clarity in the business, in the goals, and in our approach. So there wasn't any explanation required around, like, well, we tried this and now we're going this way and this is what's happening. It's kind of like, this is all we're doing. It's actually very clarifying, even when people like offer things like, hey, do you want intro to this thing? Or do you want to try this? And it's just like, no, the only thing we care about is opportunities in the pipeline and closing them. And if it's not that, kind of don't want to hear it. Mm-hmm. So it really felt more straightforward. We had more good news to share, which makes it really easy. We had a very fortunate situation where our biggest week ever was the week before the board meeting. Nice. You know, so that's always good timing because you're kind of coming in confident sounding and you're showing numbers. And, you know, so we've kind of broken through a few barriers on our GMV level and our revenue level. So that, like, it's just easier to have a board meeting when you have good news to share. The other factor that's a new experience for me, I always knew that there's the possibility of an individual investor at a VC fund that works with us, convinces their fund to put money into Rally, and then that person, that individual, ends up leaving their job at the fund, right? Like, that's just a known issue to kind of keep in mind when you're raising money from VC, because you have a champion who's putting their career and capital, political capital, career capital, on the line and going to their firm and saying, this is one of the investments that I want to do this year. Mm-hmm. And so that's the first time it happened to us. So it's not our lead investor, but one of the larger investors, and the person that I worked with was a board observer. So he's not on the board officially, but he joined all the board meetings. He's just been really helpful to me. We got close. I respect his point of view, everything. So this was the first board meeting we had where he wasn't there. So it felt a little bit like smaller, simpler, right? Because it was really just us at the company, plus our lawyer, who's always on the board calls, and then our lead investor. And the lead investor and I are like, we text every other day. So there's no surprises. There's no like new information at the board meeting. It's basically like putting together a presentation and reviewing it together. Yeah, so it felt good. We'll have another one in 3 months. And
so I think you said it's not the lead investor, but it was like a key investor in the.
Yes, one of the bigger investors that have put in, I don't know what they put in, something like $5 or $6 million. Right? So a lot of money over two rounds. And now that person's no longer there.
Does that mean that like somebody else from that firm has taken his place or her place?
So what it effectively does. So first, yes, you have a new point of contact. So he introduced me to the new point of contact. The issue is that person, the new point of contact, doesn't have the same context, yeah, relationship,
yeah,
and belief, right? This person,
yeah, it's like that, they need to,
right?
Like,
so
sort of like resold on the whole.
Yes,
I mean they're already in, but
a new relationship needs to be formed, and really what it tells the founder is, you know, blinking red warning light. You cannot assume that this firm is going to be in the future unless you re-engage and get the new point of contact to be a believer. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge and, you know, like another wrinkle in my set of tasks. So the conversation I had with the new point of contact was not only on an individual basis, me and her, on like, here's what we're doing, here's why, here's what the opportunity is, here's where we are, all that. But also trying to look under the hood a little bit and asking, what's the strategy at the fund right now? Where's the focus? How are you thinking about follow-on investments? You know, just to try to understand a lot more about what the landscape looks like with that relationship.
Mm. Yep. Yeah. Tricky.
Yeah. Tricky.
Interesting stuff, man. I got, all right, so we'll get a little bit into the, kind of speak a little bit more about my own experience of where I'm at currently, personally, professionally, as I'm again, like heading into 2024. As if you've tuned into the last couple of episodes, you know that I'm going through a bit of a transition. I'm heading into a transitional year, I think. And one question that I'm starting to like form some new point of view or a new, I don't know, for like philosophy, if you will, like for myself. And I don't know, like maybe other founders might resonate with this, but I'm sure many won't. But it's this question of like redefining what success looks like with a SaaS business.
Okay.
With a new SaaS business. So if your goal, if your general entrepreneurial goal is to get into a SaaS business and grow it and be successful with it, I really, really question in the year 2023 and 2024, how viable is it to go all in on an idea and take it from idea stage, like nothing, to profitable in, call it a year and a half, mm-hmm. 1 to 2 years. And profitable is, I mean, we're not, this is not 0 to 10K MRR. Like that's not profitable. Not mm-hmm. for where we live. Not in our stage in our life, you know?
Nope.
It's much higher than that to literally
right. be
profitable. 20 to 25 at least.
Yeah. You know?
So to go from zero, to go from idea to that, I guess a question that I really want to poke at least for founders who are in this position, who are thinking about it, like, is going all in on a single idea really the best way to get there? And like, of course, SaaS, there are plenty of SaaS businesses that are successful that do hit that profitability level and product market fit in an 18-month-ish timeframe. But my observation, and it's more of a gut read, but it's also from accounts of a lot of friends and folks in our industry, is that like, I feel like a lot of these SaaS businesses that nail product market fit in that first year to year and a half, they do it despite their shortcomings.
Okay.
You know, like
I think that's a good way to put it.
They just like, they hit this wave of demand with the right solution, the right value proposition at the right time.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm sure, of course they have some marketing wins. Of course their product works fairly well, but yeah. There's usually a lot of shortcomings, whether that's the product is pretty rough, but people are still buying it, or maybe they're frankly not doing all that much on the marketing side. And they're just, they do just have this wave of demand that is hard to stop. The question then is like, does going all in and focusing full time on a single SaaS idea, is that enough to get you that level of product market fit? Versus more of a small bets approach where you have SaaS ideas that are like side projects for a while. Obviously there's different considerations. Like if you take a lot of investment, of course you can go all in and that buys you a lot more time to explore and develop and grow something. But if you don't have that, which I think most founders don't, then you you'd have to do what most founders do, which is like either doing consulting, or if you have some other job, or if you have some other business as your main thing, and then you can sort of tinker and explore and take small bets on the side with your SaaS. And I guess the thing that I work for me, as I start to like my outlook going forward, like, yeah, I've got Clarity Flow. That's going to become one of these like smaller side bets, even though I've been at it for 3 years, but it's what I'm saying is like, it, I think that the bar, I think we have to raise the bar a lot on like when a SaaS actually deserves full-time focus or when the SaaS like demands your full-time focus. And it's not, I think that there's, and maybe one of the mistakes that I made in the last couple of years is like when my SaaS gets to 20 or 50 customers, that's a signal to go all in. But I think that that in some ways that's actually too early to go all in. I just think that like even if you have signs of customers buying your product, even if you have people who are willing to pre-buy your product or validate or get on calls and tell you that this thing is going to work, that doesn't necessarily guarantee that you can overcome competition, that you can actually reach enough distribution at scale within a year to 18 month time frame. I think you're much better off just developing these ideas until something is so successful that it just demands your full-time focus, you know? And I know that there's a lot of like debate on that, but like, I just think that that's sort of where my mindset is at. Is like maybe I'm not going to hit like a knock it out of the park home run SaaS product market fit kind of thing. Maybe I will at some point, but maybe my little SaaS ideas are going to be more of like the slow and steady growth thing that just takes many years to actually grow valuable assets. And and instead of going all in on those things over those years, at least I still spent those years like building other assets.
You know? Yes, instead of the tremendous risk of going all in for years. So yeah. I hear you. I have no idea what to think. The reason I was laughing as you were describing some of the things in the beginning is that I'm thinking of a friend of mine right now who's launching a SaaS, and he is going to kill it. And he does not know software, doesn't know product, doesn't know engineering, doesn't know any of the best practices, just none of it. Mm-hmm. But he is a great marketer and understands psychology. And he hasn't started marketing. So there's no website. There's no pricing grid. There, it's just word of mouth. And then like he sends you a Stripe link and he's growing faster than almost everyone.
That's what I'm talking about. He's hitting on a nerve.
Exactly right. And yeah. It is, and he does have a talent for knowing what the nerve is to hit. And that's where it appears in his case that that's where the majority of the value is in terms of like, you know, for the business owner. Like the best thing he's doing for the business is hitting the nerve. Literally no website. So zero best practices, SEO, any of that stuff. It's just if there is a very large pool of demand and you give them the right thing, everything else doesn't matter nearly as much. The design doesn't matter. Like basically none of it matters.
You know, and even that question of like demand and riding a wave and hitting the timing right, there's still an open question there. Like I started to shift more toward like in the last couple of years and the SaaS businesses that I chose to get into and like the products that I decided to go after, I started to veer towards the ones that aligned with pre-existing categories, you know, like, and talking to a lot of customers and having them show me like, these are the tools that I do pay for, like looking for that evidence that customers pay for tools like this. That's what gets me excited about like, oh, this is a viable category. There's that starts to de-risk an idea. I think there's some truth to that. Like don't try to be the only player in town. Of course, you can be very successful with that too if you hit a nerve and nobody's serving it. But I started to veer into like, I felt like it's like the less risky path to go into like a pre-existing category and offer something a little bit different, a little bit better, a little bit more streamlined for a particular niche, right? But yes. even then you still have the timing aspect or the time frame, like being able to grow at the rate that you need to grow in order to get to profitability,
right? To a healthy place without all the suffering
within a time frame, right? So of course you need distribution. Of course you can do things to find distribution. Of course you can do things to grow your marketing channels. And these are things that if you are working on a SaaS and you have customers for your SaaS, like you should be working on those things. Mm-hmm. But doing that full time at the expense of everything else and the opportunity cost of putting a couple of ideas out there or building other assets like an audience or building other assets in your career, like
any other business besides SaaS.
Yeah. You know,
yes,
because I think that there's a lot of dogma in our industry, which drives me up the wall around this idea that like, if you are not all in, you cannot work on things that could grow your SaaS.
I mean, there's,
like, I just don't believe that. Like the idea that if your SaaS is a side hustle for you and not your main thing, like, does that mean you cannot execute on SEO? Does that mean you cannot run outreach campaigns or ship features? I mean, of course you can, you know?
Yeah. At this point, it's everyone's job as an individual to ignore dogma. Yeah. If you are still caught up in trying to do what you think you're supposed to be doing, then you haven't gotten there yet. We're all susceptible to it, and it is an ongoing pressure, but you have to get to the conclusion at this point that there's no one way to do it. I mean, we're far enough in here that's feels a bit ridiculous.
I really think that, like, because I spend a lot of time and energy, probably more than I should, trying to analyze like what makes other SaaS businesses successful and then comparing that against my own SaaS experience. And I think that there, of course, there's always going to be SaaS stories of like nailing product market fit and growing fast within the first year or two. But I think that there's also a lot of like moderate success, really like painfully slow growth over multiple years. And eventually things starting to click because of, you know, volume and word of mouth starts.
Yeah. And you've just been around. Yeah. One of the most successful exits that I got to witness from like a close friend, it was like, I don't even know, year 7 or 8, where the first 5 years were, if you looked at it objectively, not good.
Yeah.
You know, well, I don't know what it took years to get to 20K MRR, years and years and years. And it ended up being a smash home run because years 5 and then 6 and then 7 started to compound. And then a PE firm wanted it. And, you know, my friend made a super life-changing amount of money. Yeah,
and there you go.
But the first 5 years were not cool.
Right.
Not fun. It depends. Like right now, if Rally succeeds, it will change the way things happen in e-commerce, right? So that's like the category creation. And you do most likely need 3, 4, 5 years of just lighting money on fire to create that category. And if you win, you've like got there.
You've like committed to that path and you have funded that path. Like,
yes, you know. Yes, but that is not the only way to do it. Absolutely not. And then bootstrapping and eating, you know, beans for 3 years to get to 10K MRR is also not the only way to do it. And focusing on exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tricky. I sometimes think about like what I would do next or what I would do if I weren't doing this. And I have no idea what I really think or feel about SaaS or how to go about it or how to do it or whatever my friend is doing without his marketing site. I think that's how I want to do it.
Yeah. I mean, the way that I'm thinking about it now, like for next year is not starting another SaaS as that other, the other thing besides Clarity. Like the thing that I'm starting is
right,
not SaaS.
Right. Don't do two of those.
No, I'm going the audience route. I'm going to be, you know, rebuilding my office here with, you know, doing a lot more YouTube and doing that whole thing. I launched Instrumental Products, which is like this little coaching offer. That's like a first step in this direction. But what I'm really getting into in the next couple of weeks is like getting back into full-time creator mode with the goal of just grow a large distribution channel, grow an audience and be able to build off of that. Like that's an asset that can actually grow for years and actually have value and make a lot of things easier for the next 5-10 years, you know? So that's what I'm thinking.
Cool, brother. Well, I got to run because I have a call with our new AE. to see how her first week went.
All right.
And right, that's the other topic that I would talk about, integrating these two new AEs into the team. But I got to actually have a call with her 3 minutes ago. So I got to run.
There you go.
All right, man. Have a great weekend.
Yeah. Later, folks.
See you, bud.